Blog Talk Radio.
Summertime. We're living in the summertime, which means that you got to get out. You got to get out. If you're here in California, we get out. People that I know around the country, you're getting out. You're camping. I told you I got back from Oregon a couple weeks ago, and boy, it feels good just to be outside. If you're sitting at a desk a lot like I do, it's good to be doing things that are active, physically active. Getting outside, moving around. Some things to do. MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, is here in San Jose, California. If you're in Northern California, you might want to consider this. They are having a special program regarding the strange artifacts in Mexico. And I actually listed these and showed some photographs of these artifacts. They've been on Ancient Aliens. They've been discussed in numerous magazine articles and TV shows. And what's unique about these artifacts is that they come from some unknown ruins in Yucatan, Mexico, and in central Mexico. And they're cut on bone, on rock, and on bark, tree bark. And what they are, they appear to be typical artifacts, but what's unique about them is they show images of UFOs flying in the sky, characters with helmets, full astronaut or sub-zero pressure suits, and things that you would see in a modern-day aircraft or spacecraft. And it's been my contention from the beginning that they're fake. That somebody wanted to get make a buck and create artifacts that are supposed to be real. But the thing is that I don't think they are. I think they're fake. But they were presented in 2011 to the public in a matter that one would think they could be real. Now, the person who introduced him was the son of Raul Julia, and it's Raul Julia's son, Raul Julia Levy, and he presented these things to the public and said that the Mexican government was going to be making an announcement soon that these were authentic, that these artifacts were in such a way they were had been verified by the local anthropological establishment. And since that time, nothing has come up. We've heard nothing from the government. We've heard nothing from any anthropologist. Most of the people who I talk to believe that they are fake. In fact, Mexico is basically a third world country. It's very, very poor, has very poor economy. And the people there are looking for any angles they can to make a living. And so it's been reported by a couple of people that there's various villages in central Mexico that are producing these and then burying them and claiming that they're authentic. So what I want to mention is that MUFON is having Victor Camacho, who's an investigative journalist, come out July 17th, Sunday the 17th, at 1 p.m. You can go to MUFON San Jose, go to the website, and you can read all about it. It's very inexpensive. I think it's like $10 to go and attend. But this individual, Victor, is going to present these items for everyone to look at and report on what he's discovered. I don't think he'll bring up anything new, but if he does, it will be an eye-opener for me because I don't believe these artifacts are real, but they're fairly significant. And I know a number of people in the community who believe they are real. I'm not going to name names, but there are some significant people who have been investigating anomalous artifacts for decades who believe they're authentic. So I'm going to be there with some people. I think my programming assistant, Stacy Fry, will be there too. I'm not sure, but she has expressed some interest in that. So come out and check it out. Sunday, July 17th in San Jose. I'll be there. If you're there, say hey. You know, stop by and say hey. I'll be definitely want to hear what's going on with that. So something to consider. As always, I want people to check out the Facebook page. We have some articles that went up. There was a very interesting video that was created on the Chichen Itza pyramid, the El Castillo pyramid, the castle. And what a graphic artist did was that he animated the outer portion of the El Castillo pyramid in such a way that he reveals the actual mechanism that was built into the pyramid. And basically, he's showing how the outer stonework was laid into the place it is now. It's formatted in such a way that it's built on top of a much earlier pyramid. And I've mentioned this before. There's a pyramid that was built, they believe, about 3,000 or 2,500 years ago from an earlier generation of Maya. And then the Toltecs came and built a second pyramid on top of that that you can see today. You cannot climb that pyramid anymore, but you can walk around it. You can go up a few steps. You can't go to the top. When I was there 5 years ago, you could climb all the way to the top and then down again, but I think some people fell off of it, and so they stopped doing that. But this video is fascinating. You can go see it. It's on Earth Ancients Facebook group page. And what he's done is he's broken it down to show how it was built, the importance of the 12 steps, the 12 sections, and also on the spring and I believe the winter equinox, the sun hits the outer edge of the pyramid in such a way that it actually shows the highlights of a serpent. And at the very bottom, there's two giant serpent heads that are on two outer six, the north and the south section of the pyramid. So when the sun hits, the actual reflection, the sun creates a shadow, and the shadow becomes the body of a serpent. And as you follow it from the top to the bottom, it ends in this gigantic head of a serpent, which is fascinating. Now, they don't know how that was done. Obviously, the ancients had a sense of how the earth moved around the solar system and how the sun actually was presented itself to these pyramids. They were sky watchers, and so that's how they arranged it. But this video is fantastic. Again, check it out. It's rare. We are eventually going to be presenting these things on a website, and I am going to talk a little bit about our website in a second here, but until we get the website up, most of the material will be presented that I'm speaking to you about on the Facebook page. The other thing I want to quickly mention is I have posted a photograph of some figurines that I found on eBay, and these figurines are from Central Mexico and in the Chiapas area. And the reason I posted these figurines is that they represent a number of cultures that have come and gone in Mexico. And I think the date on these are between 500 years ago and 2,000 years ago. And the reason I posted them is for two reasons. The first reason is it shows the diversity of the culture of people that were in that part of the world. And the photograph represents, and the images in the photograph are of every known civilization today, African-American, Chinese, Native American, Caucasian. And there's a few groups that have probably died out. Long heads, people with very odd facial structures. And you can see that on Facebook Earth Ancients group page. The other reason I mentioned that is not only for the fact that there was a high level of diversity, we're losing these artifacts to auctions. And I found this these images, this collection on eBay, and they're going to be auctioned off very soon. And there's nothing we can do about it. The country doesn't really have a system to stop that. So people come in and they basically pillage these ruins. And actually, even farmers will be plowing a field, and a lot of these artifacts come up and they sell them. They sell them to the highest bidder. So that's not something we want to have happen. But it's the only thing that can happen at this point because there's no way to stop it. I have a lot of these figurines in my own collection, and I find them, you know, really satisfying. But the fact is that there's thousands and thousands of these artifacts that are flowing from Mexico, and there's no way to stop them. So check it out. It's a very interesting look at ancient Mexico. And it's part of the history. It's a part of the history I'm fascinated with. And I think you will be too. So again, I did mention that we are creating finally a website. It will be started next week. I'm hoping to have it done in about 4 to 6 weeks. I'm going to put everybody who's on the team on this project. We will have so much new content to put on that site, and I think you're really going to like it. I'm very, very excited about it. You'll be able to go to earthancients.com. We currently do have a site up. It's not much to look at. It's basically a list of our past programs, our past podcasts. But the new site will have a rich collection of photos, a weekly blog, and links and access to all kinds of archives of photographs, videos, and references from the numerous guests that we have on the Earth Ancients podcast. So I hope you'll check it out. It's going to be good. We really need a website. We've needed it since we started. So looking forward to that. So we've been discussing pyramids for a number of weeks. It's an interest of mine. We understand now, if you've been listening along, that at one point there was a pyramid culture on the earth. We don't know if it started in Egypt. We know that the Maya were a big pyramid culture. We know the Aztecs were. We know that they inherited a lot of their technology for building pyramids. We've heard from Danny Hillman in Indonesia, the Gunung Penang Pyramid, and that we now know that there's a pyramid culture in Indonesia. There's a pyramid culture that was in China. There's a pyramid culture that was in Europe. We heard from Dr. Sam Osmanovic that the Bosnian pyramids are significantly old. But there's a lot more we need to understand about pyramids. We understand the pyramids are a unique structure. It's my belief that the earliest pyramids were probably made to capture the geomagnetic fields that were pulsing up from underground. And in some way, that energy was manipulated through these pyramids. But who were the original builders of the pyramids? Now, we hear from Edgar Cayce that the Atlanteans were the earliest builders of pyramids, and they used technology that is not in existence anymore to work these pyramids. They may have used them for generators. They may have used them for healing chambers. They may have used them for expanding human consciousness. But there's so much out there, so much that's been written about pyramids and their unique forms and what they are producing. My guest today has looked at pyramids from a different perspective. He's also looked at ancient Atlantis and the flood. And my guest today is Dennis Brooks. And Dennis is a retired U.S. Army development training specialist. After 20 years, he retired. He had a full military career. He's been studying Atlantis as a hobby. And he wrote his first booklet on Atlantis a number of years ago, where he found that the description of Atlantis matched the sections of the United States, specifically the plains of Florida. And he studied Cayce and information from a number of sources. And I'm really happy to have him on the program today. How are you, Dennis?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Cliff. Thank you.
Tell me about this book. I found it was quite fascinating. You're in your third rendition of it. You've actually continued to do research. What was the motivating factor to begin writing about Atlantis?
Well, I've been studying Atlantis for about 20 years, and I was studying at the time, about 10 years ago, I was studying Ignatius Donnelly's book, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. And I really dug deep into it and his book and other sources. And I began to form an opinion about where Atlantis had to be because of the size and all of the information. And I concluded that Atlantis didn't sink because Plato described a boundless continent. And I said this is both America, North America and South America together. And so at that time I was trying to decide which one was Atlantis and which one was the opposite continent that Plato mentioned. And so I decided that Atlantis had to be North America. And I found another article that said at the southern end of the continent there was a plain. And they said that at the southern end of the continent there was the city of Atlantis and the island of Atlantis. So Plato mentioned the plain of Atlantis. So that keyed me in on the area. That's when I started to. So that was about 10 years ago when I started to do serious
research.
We
want to talk about the plains in a second. But you state in your book that the Giza, Egypt, the plateau, was one of the Atlantis cities. Can you talk a little bit about that? Now, did you consider that, or did you discover that information from the work of Plato, or was it more there were some signs that revealed themselves to you that basically showed that the Giza Plateau was a Atlantean city?
Well, initially, see, Plato says very clearly that the Atlantis people had conquered Africa as far as Egypt. And it had colonies in Europe as far as Italy. So you're going to find out that the people of Atlantis were trying to conquer the world. Because remember, this Plato story about Atlantis is about the war between Atlantis and Europe.
Hmm.
So Egypt was already a colony of Atlantis. So that's where the connection to the pyramids in America come in.
Okay. You said something to me when we first talked that I thought was kind of interesting. You said that a lot of people don't really read Plato's work, that they read bits and pieces, and that by reading his complete work, the Timaeus and the Critias, and maybe some of the other works that I don't know about, there's some specific information in there that is linked to an understanding of Atlantis. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you discovered? Because I have to admit, I have not read his entire works, and I have only read bits and pieces of his two known works that reveal information about Atlantis. Well, what did you discover?
Well, I discovered that, and this is through my own research, so I had been a very avid fan of Atlantis and doing what I thought was serious reading, and I never read Plato's stories. I never bothered to find out what Plato said. What I was reading was what all of the other experts had wrote about Atlantis, and took their interpretation, and that's what I went with. And the person who did the best job of that was Ignatius Donnelly. That's what led me to go and actually find out what Plato said. And so I went to read Plato's story of Atlantis. And then I found out that I had been getting little bits and pieces and fragments from other people, but Plato's story is a huge story. It's not a brief mention of Atlantis like so many scholars say. It tells a detailed and advanced story, and it mentions several things. It goes over the same material several times, and some of it is from a little different angle, so you can get a different picture of what he's trying to say. And that's when I began to actually decode Plato's work, because see what happens, 11,600 years ago, the language has changed and become encoded. So that's where the decoding process comes from. You have to actually decode the language. And because Plato mentions different areas from different areas from different angles, then you can start to, you know, they overlap, and then you can get a picture of what he's talking about.
Is there something specific about, one of the things that you talk about is, in your book, is the Atlantis Plains, and we're going to get into a little bit more here in a second on what you believe is the connection between the current United States and the Americas, and what Plato described as the true Atlantis. But was there something in his, because you say that people don't understand his writing, in the decode. What is the decode? Are you saying that there's subtle information in his writings of Atlantis?
Yes, there is, and it's ignored because we already. If you ask anybody how Atlantis looks, they will. If they know anything about Atlantis, they'll tell you that there was this round island with circular canals around it, and then Atlantis went out from there, and then there was a mountain on it, there was a plain on it, and so forth like that. That's the image you have in your head. But what I found, and anybody can do this, if they would just take time and go and read about the Atlantis Plain in Plato's story, they would see, because he talks about the plane and he talks about the same thing that I've done in the book. And you don't have to read my book to find this. You can just find Plato's story anywhere and read about the plane that he describes. And he describes, he said the plane was oblong and extended out into the ocean, and the plane was 300 miles long and 200 miles wide. And this is the plane, and I found out that this is the plain part of Florida matches that exactly. Now.
Okay. Okay, so.
So that was just one little detail.
Okay. So that was one connection to the United States that you found was significant. Was it something in Ignatius Donnelly's work that also triggered you to think that maybe the United States was part of Atlantis?
Yeah, and basically when I found the plane, then Ignatius Donnelly's work began to make sense, because what Donnelly did was interviewed a lot of Native Americans and people in the Americas, and he took their stories and he published their stories. So all that information is right there for you to go. If you know, if you already have an idea that Florida, that the, if you already have an idea that the Americas were Atlantis, or North America was Atlantis, then you, and that Florida held the small island of Atlantis, then Ignatius Donnelly's work began to make sense to you. But
mm-hmm.
when the stories that the Native Americans told began to make sense, because they talk about this ruling force on the east in this island. And Donnelly explains this, but he doesn't connect it to North America being Atlantis, because and you'll find that Donnelly and just about everybody else, they never approached the idea that Atlantis didn't sink. They still have the notion that Atlantis sunk in the ocean, and that Mexico, America, and all of these places are related to that continent that sunk. But see, the continent didn't sink.
Okay, but in Plato's work, there was a catastrophe that basically destroyed an island in the Atlantic. So are you saying that was what he's describing is one of many land masses that were considered Atlantis?
What happened, Plato described an island in Atlantis that they thought had sunk. Okay, this is an assumption based on the amount of debris that was left in the ocean, the actual bombardments and the flooding that came to Europe. And when all of this destruction came to Europe, and millions of people died because of that flood and everything, and everyone thought that this was the result of Atlantis' destruction. So that was an assumption. And you'll see, when you read Plato's story, you will make that connection. Okay. But you have to have the notion and the idea that Atlantis didn't sink before you can make that connection. Because if you still have the idea that Atlantis is at the bottom of the ocean, nothing else is going to connect.
Okay. So as I understand Atlantis, it was a very sophisticated country. It had a number of phases. It's very old, 50,000 years is an inception date. And then according to Casey, there was an internal strife, an explosion, and then it was damaged, and then it kind of rebuilt itself to 28,000 years ago. And then at that point, there was another horrific event that basically destroyed the people of Atlantis. And then there was, what's left of Atlantis is submerged at 10,000 years ago. And this is what I understand is written in Plato's work, is around 10,500 years or 12,000 years ago, the final destruction. But there's so much to talk about when you speak of Atlantis, including satellite countries, outposts, connections with the Yucatan, the people who became the Maya, and so on and so forth. So I need to understand your point of view. Your point of view is that the Americas, specifically Florida, the plains of Florida, is what you believe Plato is talking about when he speaks of the plains of Atlantis. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what is it about the formation of these plains that you believe is so closely aligned to Plato's story? Is there some specific land masses, or is it just a flat area?
So, well, let me go back to when I first realized that the plane. I was searching for a small island of Atlantis around the Gulf of Mexico area, and after reading Plato's work, I had a better picture of what was going on, and I looked across the Gulf of Mexico, and I saw, in written across Florida, Florida plain. And that was the first time that I made the connection that Florida was a plain, and I had absolutely no idea that we referred to Florida as a plain. So, and from that point on, I could not continue to look anywhere else because I kept going back to Florida as a plain. Then I went back and restudied Plato's story, and then I began to actually make the connection. And so, not only was did Plato's measurements of Florida, of the plain part of Florida, match exactly, but he said there was a great ditch that went around the Atlantis plain, and this ditch was 1,200 miles long. So this was when I first started out, and then I looked into a National Geographic magazine, and I could see the great ditch. And then it turned out it's the Indian River. And then I measured it at that time with the rudimentary paper and ruler, and it came out to 1,200 miles. This was the plain. There was the ditch going around the plain, and then there were the canals running through the plain. And then from that point on, I searched for the small island on the plain, because Plato said that in the city of Atlantis, up and around the city was a level plain. So I knew from that point on that Florida had to be, had to hold the city of Atlantis. So all I had to do then was find the island.
Okay.
So I searched and searched and searched, and I found the island.
Interesting. Are there any artifacts that we have? I mean, Plato talks about the catastrophic event, and a lot of people are considering this this asteroid hit that really started the Younger Dryas period on Earth. Can you describe? If it's a plain, if it's a plain of land, there must be some landforms or some foundations left of buildings and things, isn't there? Shouldn't there be?
What happened when? Well, what happens with Atlantis? See, the Atlantis of the destruction of Atlantis resulted from the And I can't. And I so let me let, just let me explain the destruction of Atlantis, so that
sure.
when I mentioned that people have a better idea of what happened. So let's start with cases mentioning the destructions of Atlantis the three times. Now Atlantis was destroyed three times, and according to cases, that's exactly right. But he never said the continent of Atlantis sunk. He said, well, you know, the Atlantis were destroyed. That means the people in the civilization, everything, were destroyed from its point at that time. And so they had to rebuild to a different point. So if we look back over the last destruction, we would say 11,600 years ago, the people have evolved back to what we have in Mexico now. That would be the new Atlantis, okay, over time.
Uh-huh.
So, now, what was the question about
what are the remains of a city? If you're saying that the Atlantis plains or the Florida plains, what there should be some foundations and some artifacts and some things that are left following the destruction.
The main artifact, or the main thing that's left of, because the waves came across Florida, the tsunami waves came across Florida and washed and swept the plain clean for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that you're going to find left now is the island of Atlantis, where the temples and everything were located. And that island is in Tampa, Florida. Now, it's not a circular island like you were told, according to Plato. It is a triangular island, just like Plato describes in his book, in his story of Atlantis. Plato said that the island Atlantis was a half mile across. This island in Tampa is a half mile across. Plato said that the island of Atlantis had three large canals around it. This island in Atlantis, this island in Tampa has three large canals around it. Plato said there were two islands in the area, and they were formed when they cut the three islands, when they cut the three canals around. Cut the three canals to make the triangular island. That made two islands and another peninsula. So all those structures are right there in Tampa, and you can go in on any map and look, and you'll find those features.
Okay, Tampa offshore Tampa, like not Tampa, Florida itself. It's outside. It's an island, right?
No. Inside Tampa. Tampa Bay holds, they don't call it Tampa Bay now, but Tampa Bay, the bay that leads to Tampa, where the city of Tampa, the heart of the former city of Atlantis is now Tampa Bay. It's Tampa, Florida.
Okay, so I'm looking at a map right now, and I see Tampa. I used to live in Tampa, so this is interesting. So Tampa is like a little foot that comes out into the bay, and then if you keep going down, there's St. Petersburg, there's Clearwater.
Yeah, well, look for Harbor Island. Just spell it like the British spell it, H-A-R-B-O-U-R. Look for Harbor Island. Harbor Island is the former island of Atlantis.
Okay.
Yeah. And you'll see, it's easy to see because it has three large canals around it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at it now going,
Yeah, it has three. Now, what I don't have in the book, and I'll tell you because I've actually never had a chance to discuss this with anybody, and I didn't want to really seem like a lunatic, but when you look at Harbor Island, if you go and look up to the right corner, you will find you'll find a circular hill. You'll find a hill there. And that is the hill where, that's the hill where they started Atlantis.
Hmm.
And that is also the hill where you'll find the small island with three circular moats around it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you're not going to see the moats because Plato says clearly in his book, in just about word for word, he says that they bridged over the three moats and cut the three large canals to form the island. So they destroyed those three circular islands when they cut those three canals around the island to form the island. So now,
okay.
Any of your listeners and everything, so you don't have to read my book. All you got to do is be able to find this on the internet, and then you can verify this without, you know, you can use your own reference. You don't have to believe what I say. So again, Plato, if you look at the great ditch, you will see that the two ends of the great ditch meet at the bay coming into Tampa. And that is exactly just about word for word what Plato says. The ends of the ditch meet at the city where the water runs off into the ocean.
Hmm.
So, and you'll see that if you can see, like I say, any map where you can see the ends of this great ditch coming together at Tampa Bay.
Yeah. For audience members who want to follow along, go to Google Maps and type in maps and then go to Tampa Bay. And it's actually kind of interesting what Dennis is referring to. It does have a lot of features that are unique, and I never really paid attention to it. I guess the thing that I would question is that, I mean, when I was there, there were old buildings that had been left by various Spanish pirates. In fact, the logo for the football team is the Buccaneers, which are pirates. But I don't really remember any archaeological digs of any significance that would turn up pyramids. And I don't know of any pyramids in the Florida area that are known, unless they're mounds that have been destroyed through the action of a tsunami. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, I mean, that's a many thousand year old civilization, and you would see something. You would see something that would maybe reminiscent of a pyramid complex.
Yeah, you would think so, right? But when you read Plato's story, and this is what you got to do, you will find out that that was the beginning of Atlantis. They, Poseidon. Married his wife, and they built a castle, and then they put those three rings around the castle to protect it. So as Plato said, no man could get to the island, to the small island where the castle sat. So they weren't building pyramids back then. This was the very beginning. Matter of fact, they didn't even have ships back then when they first started the castle and everything. And this is according to Plato. You can read it in the book. So there were no pyramids. They just started. Hmm. The pyramids didn't come into play until the Florida Plain expanded all the way from Miami to Pensacola.
Hmm.
That was the city grew. They expanded around the Gulf of Mexico into the Yucatan Peninsula. That's when they start to build the pyramids.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, because the Yucatan is just clustered with amazing pyramids. Let's talk a little bit about Mexico right now. You mentioned that Mexico City was another Atlantean city. Are you referring to Teotihuacan as a and that massive pyramid complex as one of their installations?
Yeah, that was one of the installations that was one of the installations of Atlantis. So
yeah.
what you have is, so there were two cities. The Tampa, Florida was the first city, and it didn't develop to the point where they had started to build pyramids. They had a huge temple there, and each king that took over the kingdom added to the, according to Plato, added to the temple and the building and structures around there. But it didn't reach the point. Now what you did find in Florida, I want to tell you, you didn't find remnants from the Spanish coming there. You find leftover debris, foundations from where the tsunamis washed the Florida plain clean. That was not Spanish artifacts that you found, that you were looking at. You were looking at remnants of Atlantis.
Where would I see these remnants? Because when you go to the jungles of Yucatan, there are piles of rock, and this is always been my contention, is that whole plain area, which is the Yucatan Peninsula, was flattened by a massive undulating wall of water, which basically they're beginning to find out now covered the Yucatan for who knows, maybe a couple hundred years, and flattened everything. And what happens is it pushed buildings over and basically turned them into piles of rock. I don't know of any similar effects in Florida. Can you point me to that? Because if it's true, now, I mean, there, off of Miami, there's this circle they talk about. There's a circle of rock that's supposed to be significantly old, and it used to be the foundation for a building of some kind. But I don't know of anything like that in Tampa. Can you refresh my mind about that? Is there something that we've missed that is being, like you say, considered to be pirate, but maybe from an earlier civilization?
Well, going back to Tampa again, the structures they had on Tampa were weak. They would not withstand a tsunami. So all of the temples there were weak enough to be washed off into the canals, into the bay. They had some structures. So the circle that you found up near Miami is called Miami Circle.
Right.
And that, you look at it, it looks like it's a building foundation. And it could, and if you look at where the location is, it looks like a lighthouse. It might have been a lighthouse because it's
right.
Circle. And so it would have been an ideal spot for, that's what I call it. Or it could have been a temple. It could have been Poseidon's temple or something like that. But that's, now you're going to find, in the book that I have, there's another link to some weird, I think it's like weird artifact or something like that. And if you find some other structures in Florida where there are unexplained foundations and stuff like that. But you have to look in the book and look for those artifacts.
Okay.
And I don't have the book right now, so it's hard for me to go and page through it and reference it for you right now.
Sure.
But you have to go and you have to find it in the book. Now another thing that you can find, your listeners can look at right now, are the areas where the Atlantis people built their houses, their communities. Those are artworks. Those are works of art, where they actually carved the subdivisions around and use canals just like we use roads today. Anyone of your listeners can go and look at subdivisions in Florida, can type in subdivisions in Florida, and you'll you'll come up with thousands and thousands of these absolutely fantastic carved subdivisions, and you can see the places where the people in Atlantis built their houses.
Where would they see these things? What city?
It's all over Florida. All they got to do is if you go to the pit, if you go to the photo section of Google and type in Florida subdivision, you see all of these fantastic works of art, and they were carved by the people of Atlantis to build their subdivision.
Subdivision.
So what has happened? You can see that now because the people now, I guess for years, have been building houses right back, putting houses right back on these subdivisions. So they're clustered of houses. They're clusters now, just like they were in the time of Atlantis. Because
if I type in subdivisions, I'm going to get new subdivisions. Is there like a sub name? Is there like Florida subdivisions and then / ruins or something? Because I don't see.
Subdivision. Maybe you should say subdivisions and canals.
Okay. That's very cool. Is it in your book?
Yeah, there are links to it. As a matter of fact, I have some live links to some of the subdivisions in the book and the e-book. Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely post that up because I see a whole bunch of really cool examples of subdivisions, but I do not see ruins.
Well, no, the ruins. What you have to do is look for the ruins. You have to look at some of the subdivisions that haven't been that don't have new buildings on them. You're not going to find standing ruins. You're going to find standing unoccupied subdivisions that haven't been developed yet. Yeah. Because the flood washed everything, all those houses away, so you're not going to find them.
Okay. So that's interesting because we had a gentleman on our program about a year ago who talked about the artificial canals of Florida, and some of these apparently are thousands of years old, and they've been machined. And so when you say canals, I'm thinking of what he had to say and what he reported as being harbors and canals and things like that. So that it's beginning to kind of click. It's kind of focusing on some of the earlier information. I want to talk about a section of your book where you present the writings of Edward Thomas Thompson. Excuse me. Edward Thompson was an archaeologist who was placed by the Mexican government at Chichen Itza and was one of the first archaeologists that I'm aware of. I have a couple of his books. He's one of the first archaeologists that excavated Chichen Itza, and I've been there many times. It's considered by the Maya to be the Maya University. And it's interesting because you describe an article that he wrote, and actually I think you actually list this article in its entirety in your book, and what he wrote about Atlantis. Can you talk a little bit about Edward Thompson and his contributions to understanding Atlantis?
Well, like you said, Thompson was really interested in Atlantis and Mexico, and he's another person just like Ignatius Donnelly, who put all the pieces together, but did not make the statement that America was Atlantis, because he still had this idea that Atlantis sunk. But when you read his book and you read the article that's in the book there, you will see how he described all of these features, all of these structures that they found in North America, South America, Central America. And he just could not believe that this was anything other than an ancient civilization and connected to Atlantis. And this was during a time when you could a professional archaeologist could actually talk about things and relate them to Atlantis without being laughed at or called somebody that didn't know what they were talking about. So, but yeah, and then I put his information in there because he goes into very much, he goes into a lot of detail. He even talked about the possibility of the areas where he even talked about how some of the area in the Atlantic Ocean was still had remnants in I think the Saragossa Sea, where a lot of the debris lingered for quite a long time after the destruction of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
So
what I found was interesting about Thompson's writing, and by the way, it was written in 1879, is that there was those early archaeologists still believed that there was an Atlantis at one time. And then after it was, they couldn't find any evidence, they began to dismiss it. But what was the biggest shock for me when I first went to Yucatan was not only the variety of structures in their temples and in the pyramid complexes, but the level of sophistication in the engineering of pyramids. Now, if you go to Uxmal on the Gulf side of the peninsula, that has the only oval structured base for a pyramid in the world. And for anyone who's an engineer, especially a construction engineer, to lay tons upon tons of perfectly cut stonework to build an oval pyramid is a work of genius. Not only that, but it's also a work of fascinating engineering. And it's my belief that the Maya inherited their technology. What do you say about the Maya? I mean, to my mind, they're the remains of a very sophisticated civilization. What do you say about that?
Well, I think the Maya, they inherited Atlantis. But what happened, and this is the same thing happened in Europe, what happened, when Atlantis was destroyed, the people in Mexico, most of them were wiped out. They died out. Most of them were wiped out during the flood, and then those who were left died out because of disease and stuff like that. So... The people who were in highland areas gradually over the years came back to reclaim the land. And that is how the Maya civilization developed. But it developed around these structures. They didn't build them themselves. They were there when they came back into the area. And you can see that because Chichen Itza, Teotihuacan and all those places were overgrown. They had to be excavated and cleaned up. So, but they were just like the people in Europe had to recover to build, in Africa and Europe had to recover and build again. You will find that the Maya had to come back in. The Native Americans and everybody, they came back in and going toward the ocean. And then it's discovering new land and then developing. Mm. That's what happened with the Maya.
Let me ask you, the book is called Atlantis, Pyramids, Floods. And you talk about each of those things in some depth. But how far into the United States was what you believe the Atlantis? Was it the entire United States continent? Was it just the east coast of the United States? How far into it?
And so to find out how far into it, we have to go back to Casey and actually read his story. And Casey said that the continent of Atlantis was divided between 10 sons of Poseidon. Atlas was the firstborn son, and he received the biggest and the largest portion of Atlantis, of the continent. And then he goes on to describe and name the other nine recipients of countries in Atlantis. So the whole United States was divided up into ten countries, and Atlas, or the king of Atlantis, the city of Atlantis, was the king of the entire Atlantis kingdom, North America. Now, so this brings me to one point I want to mention. See, when we start talking about Atlantis, the confusion, there's a lot of confusion because we start talking about the city, we start talking about the canals, we start talking about the country, we start talking about the island and the continent. That is all broken up into little bits and pieces that cause confusion unless you know how to reference them. And in order to reference them, you have to realize that Atlantis was part of a balanced continent. The continent of Atlantis itself was North America. The plain of Atlantis was Florida. The city of Atlantis was on the Florida plain. The island of Atlantis was what is now Harbor Island in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was the early part of Atlantis. The city of Atlantis, or the main city of Atlantis at the time of its destruction, was Mexico City, or the Yucatan Peninsula. The Yucatan Peninsula was the number one largest and biggest city. Tampa, Florida was the first and oldest city of Atlantis when the destruction happened.
So that scenario, and you've talked a little bit about it, is that asteroid hits, massive flooding, tsunami destroys the cities, kills millions of people, displaces millions of people. The survivors basically have to come back, and maybe a handful of people remember the technology, remember the sophisticated society, and they slowly rebuild. So what you're saying is that a lot of these ruins in Mexico are significantly older than we understand.
Exactly.
There's really no date for Teotihuacan. It's a massive pyramid complex.
Exactly.
They've tried to date sections of Yucatan to be a few thousand years ago, but it's obvious that it's significantly older, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can see the same thing with the pyramids on Giza. See,
mm-hmm.
By the time Atlantis was expanding, so it started out on the Florida plain. It went around to the Yucatan, and then they were traders. So they traded. They were trained with Europe and Africa. Then they established colonies in Europe and Africa, and they also started to improve on the pyramids because they were building they're getting away from the step pyramids and building the smooth pyramids, and that's what they built in Egypt. They even had some step pyramids in Egypt before they advanced to the regular smooth pyramids. So
you know, yeah. Go ahead.
So you can see, and so another thing, now we talked about the flood. Now, the pyramids on Giza Plateau, they have an element there that can actually date the flood. See, when the flood happened, millions and millions of gallons of water went out into the came in and flooded the Mediterranean basin. And when it did, the water rose about 600 feet and went out into the ocean. So when the water receded and headed back toward the ocean, it left all of this debris. And there were 14 feet of silt left around the Great Pyramid, 14 feet of silt. And it had all this debris with bones and carcasses of fish and animals and stuff like that. That debris could be radiocarbon dated. And that debris has been radiocarbon dated, and it's 11,600 years old.
Okay, wait a minute. This is great. This is, and I'm glad you brought this up, because when we first talked, you mentioned the water line on the Great Pyramid. You also
right.
mentioned, and I had known this from Chris Dunn, who is an engineer, wrote a book on the Great Pyramid, that when they began to look inside, there was a salt residue on some of the main
right.
chambers. And that salt residue was from ocean water. But
exactly.
this is I want you to tell us in more specific terms, how would they when did they find these skeletal remains of fish and mollusks and things like that? Is that a recent discovery that they carbon dated? Because I mean, there's been so many people. Different civilizations following the Egyptians that have spoken about the Great Pyramid, and this is the first time I've heard about carbon dating. So tell me a little more about this in specific, because this is great. I love this kind of news.
Yeah, well, see, the thing about it is it's just a small blurb on the website, and I have the link to the website in my book, and I also have keywords there. If you can't find if the link is not working, or you're not reading an ebook, you can type in the keywords, and it will take you to the original source where I got the information from.
Okay.
Okay. And like I said, I don't have a book. I'm not trying to page through the book here. There's so much
sure,
information
no.
there that I can't really. So you have to read the book, and the book is only 99 cents.
Oh,
so,
you mean an e-book, the e-book.
The e-book is only 99 cents, and you can
wow.
get it on Amazon.com. So you can actually go, when you go to the section, I think it's chapter 8, where I date the pyramid, you can go, you get the name of the person who published the information, and you get a link to their website, and you get more
mm-hmm.
detailed information about that
about okay, so
research.
Tell me, what year was it that they did the carbon dating? Can you tell me that?
No, I don't remember the exact date. As a matter of fact, I don't know who did it. But
okay,
the information that I have, like I say, is available to you through the book, and like
okay.
yeah, it's kind of hard for me to remember all of these details.
Sure. No, I'll I definitely want to post that. I for those of you who are listening, I'm going to post that section on from the book on the carbon dating of animal of water remains, animals in the water, fish and animals in the water that have proved that that area was underwater 11 or 12,000 years ago. I want to mention something else, Dennis. You have another fascinating video called Wisconsin Artifacts that I have posted, and it's actually and it's fascinating. I've never seen this before. It's artifacts that are stored somewhere in Wisconsin, and they don't give the name, but they actually show specifics on these artifacts. Can you talk a little bit about this video? It's amazing. It goes on for about 10 minutes, and it has everything from crowns. It has stone carvings. It has a ton of stuff. Tell us
yeah,
a little
this,
bit about that.
Yeah, this and what I do, it's kind of hard to tell you any more about the video, but what I can tell you how I related to Atlantis. Remember, well, I didn't talk that much about the Carolina event, but one of the things that disqualifies the Americas from being Atlantis is that you can't find artifacts And see, archaeologists like to find artifacts in the ground. They like to go down five or six layers down and say, I found this artifact from this group. But you can't date the artifacts and stuff like that if there was a flood disrupted everything. So when these people find these artifacts and collect them, they are dismissed as fakes. But they don't realize is that when a comet came into the Earth's atmosphere, it broke up into 500,000 pieces and bombarded the United States and North and South America. And all the people who were living at that time, living there, were destroyed, and all of the artifacts and everything were displaced. And so when farmers go out, like you said earlier in the beginning of the show, when farmers, construction workers, and people go out and find these artifacts, they turn them in and try to explain that, you know, this is real, but they don't, they dismiss them. But over the years, people have collected those artifacts. And you saw one video of one collection. There are hundreds of collections in private museums and stuff like that all over America. And that's why you find the metal knives, axes, weapons, and all sort, swords. All of these things are being picked up and put in private collections in the United States.
But I don't know where you found this this warehouse, because somebody basically dismantled a cave or found a ruin somewhere in Wisconsin, and there's literally thousands and thousands of pieces of artifact, some with drawings on them and some with sketches that are amazing. It's like, I've never seen this before. This is like the most amazing video I've ever seen. And by the way, for those listening, you can see it on Earth Ancients. Go to the Facebook page, go to groups, and I posted it just about yesterday. I posted it late yesterday for this show. Atlantis Pyramids Floods with author Dennis Brooks. So do you have more of these kind of videos in your book?
I have in the book. You find links to just about everything I say in the book. I try to reference it with either a website or a video or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you'll find this material throughout the book. There's one video in there that talks about Mystery Mountain in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about all the debris and rocks and stuff on the Yucatan, and that's mm-hmm. the same thing that you find on the Mystery Mountain, and this video talks about there, and they found an inscription on one of the boulders down at the base of the mountain that had ancient Hebrew text on it, and it's part of the debris and stuff that like. Of rocks and boulders, and it's upside down, and they found out that is a different version of the Ten Commandments.
And that oh, really?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Mm. So that brings some more elements in there. But you know, we've just talked about the basics. On the American side of the of Atlantis, we have to talk mm-hmm. about how it affected Europe sometime.
Yeah, I want to ask you real quickly. The book is titled "Atlantis Pyramids Floods: Why Europeans Are White." Okay, so you're an African American man. Was there something about that you felt that was unique? I say that because when I look at the remains of, and I consider myself a Mayanist. Now, for those of you listening, you hear me talk about Maya all the time, the Maya, who they were, we don't know. But what we do know is they were highly culturally diverse. There's African-centric people. There's Asian-centric people portrayed in the artifacts. We know of a race that has now been removed, which were the longheads. These were not people that had head binding. They died out. Probably my guess is because of the conditions of the earth changed and they could not live anymore in the environment, but they're portrayed in the artwork. Now, what would you say is the reason by saying why the Europeans are white? Were they not diverse, or is that because the original Atlanteans were white?
No, it's because what happened, people migrated out of Africa and spread out all over the world. But the people in around the Mediterranean Sea and Mediterranean Basin, they had a gradient of all black, mostly blacks in Africa, then brown people in the Mediterranean area, then white people up on north of up north from Europe. So that's what we are used to. But what happens? Because of the flooding, the comet that destroyed Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll say this happens periodically. And each time the Mediterranean is flooded, it kills off most of the brown skinned population in the area. And the rest of the brown skinned population who survive, most of those people die out. And then you have the whites in Europe, and then you have the blacks in Africa. Then it takes another few thousand years before the brown skinned population to come back again. And the reason white Europeans are white is because if you read any of the history of Europe, you'll find that all of the Germans, the British, and everybody came down from the mountain to reclaim the land. That's because the people around in the flood area were drowned, and they was killed. And the ones who survived were the ones up in the mountain area. So they came down and repopulated the area, and then when the Africans came, kind of gradually came back to the Mediterranean, and they were black, and so it took another few thousand years for the blacks and whites to get together to develop a brown skin population.
Interesting.
So, and this happened, and Plato says it's when you read a story again, you got to read Plato's story. Is what I'm trying to tell everybody to do. He said there were numerous floods in the area, but this flood was the greatest one of all.
Hmm.
So,
because it did such catastrophic damage, I guess.
Yeah. So, and normally it would be like five or ten thousand years or so. Maybe one comet would hit the Atlantic Ocean, flood the Mediterranean basin, flood the whole Atlantic Ocean basin with tsunami waves, and all of the lowland areas, the cities on the coastal areas are destroyed. But the people in the relatively high areas survive. But the people in the last flood, Noah's flood, this destroyed, this was an event here that went up. The reason I say it went 600 feet up is because if you look at the main pyramid there, the highest pyramid on the Giza Plateau, part of the outside covering on this pyramid is left in place. And that marks the height of the flood. You will say, well, why is this cap left on the pyramid? If you ever wondered that, then you can say, well, the floating water rose high enough so that the water rose high enough so the floating debris in the water knocked loose the outside covering and left this cap on the pyramid.
Hmm.
That's how we know. That's how we know how high the water was, how high Noah's flood was.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that people who don't even believe in Atlantis or don't thought one way at all about Atlantis believe in the flood. This
mm-hmm.
explains to them how the flood happened, when it happened, and why it happened.
Okay. Okay. Fantastic. The book, again, is Atlantis, Pyramids, Floods. My guest today has been Dennis Brooks. This is the third edition. You can find the book on Amazon. It's an e-book, and it's immediately downloadable, and you can find all these amazing links. I've posted a couple of the links on the Facebook page, most notably these amazing artifacts that were found in Wisconsin, and there's a lot more in that book. So, Dennis, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Much success on this third edition, and I guess you're going to be continuing to write on your research.
Yeah, as new information come available, I'll add it to the book. But I appreciate you having me on, Cliff. I really thank you for.
Yeah, it's been fun.
So,
and I think now that you've been on the program, people are going to really want to get more information about what you're finding. Do you have a website?
Yeah. AtlantisPyramidsFloods.com. I have some information up there, and it's there. They can get the story behind the story. It basically tells how I, step by step, how I discovered and made the assumptions and discoveries I've made. So they can do
fantastic.
That.
Beautiful. All right. Thanks, Dennis, and it's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate you having me on. Okay.
Great. All right. So that's today's show. I want to remind everybody that you can see a lot of this information on our Facebook page, Facebook Earth Ancients. Go to the group page. Occasionally, I'll put it on the international page. And thankfully, with the help of our team, we're going to have a website up in a few weeks, which will have extensive information on our site. So stay tuned for that. I'll be mentioning it more. It'll be a chance to have extensive contact with the authors and the researchers who are on our program, as well as videos that I cannot put on Facebook because they take them down for copyright issues, even though they're sanctioned by the various people who produce them. So as a reminder, our guest next week is Gary David, who has written a tremendous amount on the Hopi natives. I've been looking forward to having Gary on the program for almost a year, and this is going to be a real fun interview with him. He has a new book out. And also let you know that there are some fantastic new people that are continually being added to our program. So do stay tuned. Program is every Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. And we do have it broadcast through our affiliates around the world. Special thanks to Stacy Fry for her great work, to Curtis Hardong for his continued support, for LeGrand Green for his support, and for everyone else in the program that makes the program what it is. Have a great day. Thanks.